नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय वासुधासरीर्यस्य विश्वम् अप्लावयन्त्यपि नीचगैव सदा भाति त्वं चैतन्य प्रभुं भजे I worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by whose nectarine mercy. I worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose nectarine mercy flows like a great river, inundating the entire universe. Just as a river flows downstream, Lord Chaitanya especially extends himself to the fallen. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Daya Koro More. He prays for Lord Chaitanya's mercy because he is the mercy incarnation, having appeared especially to reclaim the fallen souls. The more fallen one is, the greater one's claim to the favor of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One must only be very sincere and serious. Despite being contaminated by all the bad qualities of this Kali Yuga, if one surrenders unto the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord will surely and certainly deliver him. The best example is Jagai and Madhai. In this age of Kali, practically everyone is like Jagai and Madhai. But the Sankirtan movement inaugurated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is still flowing like a great river, inundating the entire world. And thus, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is successfully claiming all fallen souls to free them from contamination. Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Brinda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya
Gaura Bhakta Brinda All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda. All glories to Advaitacharya. And all glories to the devotees of the Lord. Announcement can be as disturbing as a cell phone. But because it is offered with love and devotion, it's very pleasing to the heart. I worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose nectarine mercy flows like a great river, inundating the entire universe. Just as a river flows downstream, Lord Chaitanya especially extends himself to the fallen. We are reading from Adi Lila, chapter 16 of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, text number 1 and 2. This chapter is entitled The Pastimes of the Lord in His Childhood and Youth. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami begins this chapter with a beautiful Sanskrit verse. Such great personalities as Kaviraj Goswami in one poetic expression of love can also reveal the innermost secrets on a very practical level of how one can access the grace of the Lord and thus overcome all obstacles in life. As long as it's not coming from Gaur Gopal, it's... Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described his nectarine mercy. It flows like a great river, inundating the entire universe. Just as a river flows downstream, Lord Chaitanya especially extends himself to the fallen. This analogy of a river is very powerful. Wherever we go in the world, we find there are great and famous rivers that have been there timelessly. In India, countless rivers, Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati, Narmada, Kaveri, Krishna, Godavari, Krishnaveinva, and so many others. The Vara, the Nasi, Varanasi is two rivers coming together. In Europe, there is the Rhine, the Thames, the Danube, so many songs about all of them. In America, there's the Mississippi River. I still remember in school how to spell it, M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I. Also known as Old Man River. Just keeps flowing along. Whatever happens in the world, the river just keeps flowing. It was a beautiful song. The slaves used to sing it when they were in total desperation, being exploited, abused, had no freedom. It said, the old man river, he must know something, because he don't say anything. He just keeps flowing along. And then there's the Ohio River, the Missouri River, so many rivers. The Colorado River. That's where Chaikoranga Prabhu lives, somewhere around there, I think.
In South America, there's the Amazon River. You have heard of all these? So much of the greatness of a nation is known by what happens near the river. The whole Egyptian civilization was built near the Nile River. A little lower, there's the Congo River. Most of the Western religions, so much history along the banks of the Jordan River. Last night, we were up till quite late just looking at the moon, the full moon. And we were thinking, this is Gaur Purnima, a very holy moon. And so many things change in this world, but when you look up in the moon, you see the same moon that people saw during Lord Chaitanya's time. Yes? Bengal is very different from what was Lord Chaitanya's. Vrindavan is forever, eternally, the holy abode of the Lord, but men have done a lot to Vrindavan. When Krishna wasn't there, there wasn't dharamshalas and restaurants and hotels and golf courses. So with Bombay, when I first came to Bombay, it was nothing like this. Very different city. So we change everything, but somehow or other, human beings have not figured out how to change the moon yet. So when you look at the full moon, you see the exact same full moon. We're looking at it from here. Isn't it interesting that in Mayapur, they're looking up and seeing the exact same moon that we're looking at here at the exact same time? And anywhere in the world, when you look at the moon, same moon. And a full moon looks like a full moon, whatever, 5,000 years ago, during Ramchandra, same moon. But interesting is, what we see is never the same from one second to the next, because it's the light of the sun reflecting, yes? So the light is always different. So it appears to be the same, but actually what we're seeing is constantly being changed. There's so much to learn just by looking in this. And similarly, the rivers. Ganga, Mayi. I was just in Rishikesh, sitting on the banks of the Ganga. And just thinking how the Aryans, during that civilization, and then there was the Mughal takeover, and then there was the British takeover, and then somehow or other India got freedom, and sometimes Congress is in power, and sometimes BJP is in power. So many things happen, but Mother Ganga keeps flowing. Like the moon, the surface is always changing. But the current beneath the surface is constant. The current of truth is constant. Although the manifestations within this creation are in constant change. Nothing is actually stable even for a couple seconds. We may look at a big mountain and think it looks still, but on an atomic level, there's always changes happening beneath the surface of our mortal eyes. So much dynamic activity taking place, constant change. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is like the greatest of all great rivers. It is forever flowing and inundating the entire universe. still, yegatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. The Lord reciprocates with how we are willing to open our hearts to receive His mercy and to surrender. So the Lord can inundate the entire universe, and still, the majority of the population may not take advantage of it. It's like in a desert. There could be beautiful, wonderful water, but if nobody's willing to go to drink it, that is the problem. And really, what is the Krishna consciousness movement? It's not creating the river. The river is already there. It's trying to somehow or other persuade people, drink from this water. People are so busy drinking the waters of the temporary materialistic satisfaction, striving after these things, mad after these things, spending so much time risking their lives to try to quench their thirst with the salted waters of material enjoyment. So we can't take any credit. We're not creating any rivers. Lord Chaitanya is already inundating the world with the river. But through knowledge and through our examples, we have a chance of helping Srila Prabhupada and the great acharyas to just convince people this salty water that you're giving your lives to try to find, it's not what really makes you happy. Here is the river. Here is the Lord's mercy that has descended into this world. Just like a river, many, they begin in very high places. The Ganga begins in Gomukh, above Gangotri. Yamuna begins at Yamunotri, high in the Himalayas. The Godavari begins at, I believe, Brahmagiri in Nasik. You have to climb a high mountain to get to that. And they naturally flow down toward the sea. And the sea is like the level when we evaluate how high something is from a geological perspective, we say so much meters above sea level. So the sea level is like the bottom place. And earth, mountains, whatever it may be, cities, civilizations are built, you know, different levels above that sea level. And these great rivers, they are always flowing to the sea, always flowing to that lowest place, naturally. And in a similar way, this is a universal principle. In the Bible, Jesus says, "The meek shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the humble in spirit, for those are the kingdom of God." Theirs is the kingdom of God. And Srila Prabhupada explains that when great souls talk about being fallen, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are fallen. It means that they feel fallen. There's a very, very distinct difference. We're supposed to feel fallen, but we're not supposed to be fallen. Because there are a lot of fallen people. But the river of that mercy, they're not accessing it. To feel fallen is humility. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is not just speaking it, but he's feeling it in his various beautiful expressions of his heart. One verse, he says that I am suffering due to material disease and this with the symptoms of the boils of envy. And in this state, I take shelter of the great physician, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How many of you have had boils? Raise your hands high, please. Were they quite painful? Raise your hand if the boils were very painful. Very nice. Huh? What, Govinda, what are you saying? Boils is when you have in your skin pus and swelling and very much pressure. Anyways, when you have a boil, if you really have a bad boil, it just gets more and more and more painful until it breaks open and all the pus comes out. As long as the pus is in there. And the worst thing is if the pus doesn't come out. If it goes in instead of out, there's a certain technical word for that, and then your whole system becomes totally toxic. I've had that too. You get fevers and everything. And sometimes they even, they may have to amputate your limb if your boil goes in, the pus goes in. But you're just waiting for it to come out. It's painful, painful. And even though pus is so ugly, it's really disgusting. It's thick and it's gooey and it's green. Swamis have these inclinations to disgust. But still, it's like a celebration when it starts coming out. You're just waiting day after day, when's it going to come out? And you can't make it come out. It has to come out on its own. Even if you try to puncture it, if it's not ready, it just doesn't come out. Sometimes a week, pain, when would it come? And then it comes. It's the most disgusting stuff you could possibly imagine, but you're so happy to see it because it's coming out of you. So Kaviraj Goswami is giving a good analogy that envy is like boils, the worst possible boils. See? And they cause so much pain to the mind, so much pain to the heart. In fact, Srila Prabhupada explains that the basic principle of material existence is envy. When we want to be the proprietor, the controller, the enjoyer, it's a symptom of envy of God. And if we're envy of God, envious inherently, then we potentially could be envious of anybody if the circumstances just are favorable or unfavorable, however we want to interpret it. Brothers and sisters, friends and friends, partners. We see in this world so much envy. In the name of God and religion, so much envy. We don't want to see. There was one, Oscar Wilde, I think it was. He said, it's He said, it takes a good man to sympathize with someone suffering, but it takes a very great man to sympathize with someone's success. When somebody's suffering, we have a tendency to put out, to really, you know, feel very favorable toward them. But when somebody's successful, the tendency is to be envious of them. It's a very, very deeply rooted human tendency. And Srila Prabhupada, he just makes it so clear why we don't get it. It's a great wonder. Srila Prabhupada, again and again, he defines so simple. He said, a Vaishnava means to be without envy. That's what it actually means to be a Vaishnava. It's not just about putting on tilak and putting on kantimala and folding your dhoti nicely and wearing your sari, you know, in such a way that nobody sees your hairs. I don't know what they do. But it's not just about, you know, carrying a bead bag around. All these things are very, very, all these aspects, it's not even just about doing your sadhana or following the four regulative principles. That's not what a Vaishnava is, essentially. Following the regulative principles, doing our sadhana, wearing tilak and saris and dhotis are all methods that are meant to bring us to the point of being non-envious. But being a Vaishnava means to be without envy. Because you can't love God if you're envious. They are total opposites, love and envy. They are the most opposite things in creation, love and envy. Hate is a symptom of envy. The root cause of hate is envy. So Kaviraj Goswami is explaining envy is like boils. They are the source of so much emotional, mental pain for the heart. Due to the material disease, he said, I am contaminated by the disease of material infection and suffering due to the boils of envy. So this material infection, the symptom is envy. And when we actually take to spiritual life, sometimes what happens is we puncture that boil and the pus starts coming out. The pus, which is the cause of the envy, starts coming out. And it looks really ugly. But if we don't like it, or we think, well, let me just keep it inside so I don't see it, then it only exasperates the disease. So sometimes devotees, after taking to sadhana bhakti, they feel more contaminated than they ever were before. It's not that you're actually becoming more contaminated. It's that the pus is coming out and it doesn't look nice. We have to just let it, we just have to let it flow and keep performing our sadhana with good character. But interesting, it's because Kaviraj Goswami is feeling himself to be in such a state that he's sincerely, urgently taking shelter of the great physician, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you feel you're well and healthy, do you take shelter of a doctor, Dwarkadish Prabhu? How many patients do you have that really take shelter of you, that feel themselves to be very perfect health? zero. But when somebody really feels helpless and they can't do it on their own, then they really take shelter, do they not? It's humbling. Similarly, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes that I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. If anyone hears my name, they lose their piety. And if anyone speaks my name, they become sinful. And he begins that verse by saying, I am lower than a worm in stool. That's quite graphic. I think that goes beyond the boils of envy. Because he was a Goswami too. Great Goswami. These analogies are very striking. They really hit you hard. It's not that we should just read it and go over it. We should meditate on it. What does it mean to think yourself lower than a worm in stool? You have to put yourself in that position. First of all, you have to meditate on stool. This is a meditation. There's all sorts of yogic meditations that the teacher guides you through. I'm not going to do it in front of the deities too extensively, but a little I will. There it is, stool. I mean, not some plastic stool, real stool. Its texture, its flavor, its fragrance. I mean, you have to really imagine it. And then you are in this body of a little worm. You don't have legs. You don't have arms. You just kind of slither around. And practically anything you do, it go, because the way you're slithering around, you go face first, right? Like now we walk with our legs and we have our hands, so you know our mouth is in a different place. But a worm, wherever he goes, he just goes face first and everything goes in his mouth. And everything goes in his nose, if they have noses. It just, everything. And that's where you live. It's a low position, isn't it? He's saying, I am lower than a worm in stool. And what does he mean? The stool of envy, the stool of lust, the stool of anger, the stool of arrogance, the stool of all these materialistic qualities. The stool of attachment to so many things that just aggravate our material condition. He's seeing that as stool and just crawling around, eating it all, smelling it all, drinking it all. And Srila Prabhupada, he gives the analogy too. He said, dry stool is very unpalatable for a hog or a worm, but wet stool is very delicious. That's the taste that they have developed. So in this state, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is Trinadapi Sunichena Tador Ibasi Hishnana Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. In that state, you just don't make aparads. You don't make offenses. Because actual aparads, there's minor aparads, and then there's serious aparads, offenses. A minor aparad is you accidentally touch a devotee with your toe. And you just, you know, I'm sorry. Or you may step over a person during class. We should try to avoid them because it's very important to attune our consciousness to be aware of being respectful. But real offenses is when we actually try to hurt someone due to envy or due to arrogance. That is serious. That Krishna cannot tolerate. If we speak words or perform actions to try to impede a person's progress in life due to arrogance or envy, that is called the mad elephant offense. And the scriptures explain so much of the suffering that people go through are due to past offenses. And so much of what devotees have to go through is due to offenses. And the offense is considered, offense to a Vaishnava is considered a mad elephant offense. How many of you have encountered mad elephants? I was just in Rishikesh, and it's interesting, driving down from Dehradun to Rishikesh through the forest. Every couple hundred meters practically, or within every kilometer, I would say, there are big signs, amazing signs. And some of them are different, some of them are the same. They have this gigantic photograph of a male elephant with massive tusks pushing over a car, the way a child pushes over a mango seed. That's what it looks like. A car full of people looks like a little matchbox compared to this elephant. And he's standing over it, pushing it over. And it says, beware of wild elephants. Everywhere, because so many people get hurt. Cars get crushed. People get killed. And as we're driving, the person driving, I said, do you see, because you drive this road many times, do you see wild elephants? He says, oh yes, so many times. I said, well, has any ever attacked your car? He said, no. I said, what would you do if he did? He just looked at me like, I hope they don't. Because there's nothing you can do if they block your car. Because they stand in front of it and they block the road. And what are you going to do? You know, you start backing up, he'll just, they just step on it, knock it over, throw it down a cliff. So I was wondering why they're having all these signs, because what are you going to do about it? But then I was thinking, you know, people could chant the holy name when they're driving. Sincerely, that's probably the value of the signs. But our farm community, Gokul Dham, in Karnataka. His Grace Bhaktirasamrita Maharaj, Madhava Prabhu, and so many devotees are there. They told me, one time I was there, and they told me that there's very, very clear water on the neighbor's farm. And we have an ox cart with a big water storage that we take there and fill it with water and then bring it back to our place, because we don't have that fresh water like they do. So at a certain point, the neighbor would not allow us to bring the ox with the big water tank. We'd have to just go there with buckets by foot, because he had a rice crop growing. And this time of the year, he wouldn't allow, because it would interfere with his growing of rice or something. So then I saw our devotees were going with the ox cart. I said, this is the time of the year. How is that? He said, because the rice crop of our neighbor was totally destroyed by an elephant. Now I'm getting to the point of the story, so be a little patient. One elephant, massive male elephant. The difficult thing is, because they're endangered species, if you kill an elephant, you have to spend years in jail. The elephant can do anything to you, but you can do nothing to the elephant. You could try to keep the elephant out, but how do you keep an elephant out? Of your rice crop, you have to spend crores of rupees building giant walls this thick. Otherwise, you know, you put barbed wire fence or a metal fence, the elephant just throws it away or just runs through it. There's nothing you can do. So the elephant, and they eat huge amounts of food. It's like Hastinapur, the city of elephants. In days of history, the great kings, it's a sign of great wealth that you could maintain a lot of elephants because they eat so much. They can eat, I don't know, 100 kilos. So anyways, this elephant was just eating all the rice just when it's about to be ready to harvest, just eats and eats and eats and eats and eats and eats and eats, just massive amounts, just pulling it right out of the ground. And then when he's totally overeaten, you know, whole quantities of your rice crop, then he lays on his left side. And wherever he lays, he completely crushes and destroys the crops that are there. And then, you know, he just starts rolling around and laying at different places, getting up and laying here and laying here. And whatever he lays on is destroyed. And then after he gets up, he starts eating more and more and more. And they come at night. And this elephant, in a matter of a few days, destroyed his entire crop of rice. And some years, he brings friends. So they told me that a little boy, about 8 years old, was walking, and he saw the elephant, and the elephant looked at him, and the little boy got scared, and he went, screamed and started running away. And you can't run away from an elephant. They're really fast because they're so huge. So the elephant charged at this little boy and trampled him with his giant feet and pierced him with his tusk and killed the child. And still, they couldn't do anything to the elephant. So a few days later, this was just on the property adjacent to ours. A few days later, I think it was a couple brahmacharis, they were walking, and the elephant saw them. The elephant charged at them in anger. He's a mad elephant. There's a time when these elephants, something starts exuding out of them, and they become completely insanely mad and violent. In fact, years ago I went to the Columbus Zoo in Columbus, Ohio, and there was panthers and leopards and tigers and lions and cobras and vipers and snakes. And I asked, what is the most dangerous animal for the keepers here? And they said, the elephants, specifically the male elephants. Because you actually have to go in and take care of them. And when this stuff starts exuding out of them and they go into this mad state, it could happen at any time. He said, it's common that they kill the person who's trying to take care of them. And they're very, extremely strong. I saw at Guruvayur an elephant, a male elephant, wrap his trunk around a tree and uproot it and throw it. So this male elephant is mad and he's charging at these brahmacharis. And they're running as fast as they can, but the elephant is galloping behind them. And he's catching up speed really fast with the intent to trample them and stab them and just mutilate them. Very angry. He's screaming, and they're running and running, and they understood there's no way that they could get away from the elephant. And one of the brahmacharis, remember, he was brought up in a village, and somebody taught him when he was a child that if you're chased by a mad elephant, what you have to do? You have to find a hill and run downhill. It's the only hope. You can't fight. Can't pick up a stick and say, hut, hut. Even a gun, even if you have a pistol or a rifle, it doesn't work. You know, for an elephant, you have to have an elephant gun. It's very difficult. Isn't it interesting? He learned this when he was a little boy, completely forgot about it, only when he was in total desperation, he was praying to Krishna for shelter. He remembered this little lesson. It's interesting because it's like the elephant, Gajendra. Gajendra completely forgot about who he was in his past life and all that. And when he was in the crocodile's jaws and he was about to die, then the elephant, you know, somehow or other, in that point of desperation, he remembered the prayers he learned as King Indrajuman in his past life, and that saved him. He prayed to the Lord, and the Lord came down, and he prayed with total humility. Yes? Gajendra, he prayed in total humility. He understood, I'm the king of the entire jungle, but now I'm about to die by this little crocodile. There's nothing I could do. He was exhausted. He had lost all his strength. He was humiliated in front of his wives and his children and everybody else. He was finished. And with total humility, he remembered these prayers and picked up a lotus and surrendered to the Lord. So these brahmacharis, one of them remembered in that state of the highest desperation that if you want to escape a charging elephant, you have to run downhill. And there happened to be a hill right on the left side of them. So they just jumped down the hill instead of running, running. And as they were running, they were falling and rolling and getting up and running and falling and rolling and getting up and running and running. And the elephant charged after them down the hill. But because elephants' bodies are so heavy, they can't go fast downhill. If they do, they'll fall. And so the elephant had to go really slow downhill, kind of putting his weight backward as he was going. So they escaped. Thank you, thank you. And when I heard this story, I was thinking, that's it! That is it! That's the philosophy of bhakti. That's what this verse is talking about. If
we want to escape the mad elephant of Vaishnava Aparad, there's only one way to do it. We can't be on this, we can't try to outrun it. We can't try to overcome it. The only thing that works is we have to humble ourselves to take a very low position. When we humble ourselves to take a low position, we are protected from the mad elephant of aparad, of offenses. You don't make offenses when you're humble. And whatever offenses you've made, we can actually overcome the reactions out of if we take a humble position. Just like Jagai and Madai, they offended Nityananda Prabhu in their arrogance. And they offended so many others. And it wasn't by their intellect. It wasn't by their tapasya. It wasn't by any rituals that they could overcome it. It was only when they fell at Lord Nityananda's feet and with a genuinely sincere and serious heart that Prabhupada talks about here, that they humbled themselves to beg forgiveness and to want to serve, they were completely forgiven. And when Madhai asked Nityananda that, you know, I hurt you, but you forgave me, but what about everybody else I hurt? Nityananda Prabhu said, humbly serve everyone. Clean the bathing ghats of Navadvip. And whoever comes to those bathing ghats, beg forgiveness and serve them with all humility. And build a new ghat with your spade to serve them. And whoever came before Madhai, he would perform his prostrated obeisances. He would beg forgiveness. And with all humility, he would serve them. It wasn't just a vocal thing. But he would build ghats for them. He would clean for them. He would carry their clothes for them. He would wash their clothes for them. He freed himself of all the aparads he ever did by taking a humble position. And in that humble position, chanting the names of Krishna. This is the secret of success, and there's no other way. Sincere, serious humility and service is the only way to overcome our aparads and prevent future aparads. And it's the only way to call out the Lord's name in a way that he takes us serious. Krishna takes us... Krishna will connect us with himself in any way we chant the name. But he'll take us serious to reveal himself and really help us when we chant with great seriousness. And seriousness means humility, with a desire to serve. This is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally demonstrated. And this is what each and every one of his devotees personally demonstrated. The Lord is like a river. And the flow of that nectaring river of his mercy flows to those who feel themselves very humble and fallen. If you think you're very high, rivers don't flow upstream. Sometimes they do, but it's very rare. Rivers flow down. Have you ever seen a river flowing up a mountain? Naturally, sometimes, you know, we have pumps with fountains and stuff like that. But a river, a big river, they flow down. So the nectarine mercy of the Lord goes to the low, goes to those who feel themselves lowly.
they don't go up to those who feel themselves great. And that is the principle of Queen Kunti's prayer, Janmai Shirga. She says that those who are proud of high birth, high education, high wealth, and high beauty, they cannot call your name with feeling. Akinchana Gochara. You are the property of the impoverished. And what does that impoverished mean? It doesn't mean you necessarily have to be physically in poverty, but it means you feel that nothing is mine, Akinchana Gochara. Because after all, the gopis were supremely beautiful. That wasn't a disqualification for them. But they weren't proud of their beauty. Their beauty was just for Krishna's pleasure. It wasn't for their own arrogant enjoyment. And we read about great kings like Yudhisthira Maharaj. After he was coronated by Krishna, he was the wealthiest man in all the world. But that was not a disqualification because he understood all my wealth belongs to Krishna and I'll use it to serve. He was in the most humble state. And we read about scholars, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami. They were the greatest scholars in the creation. They had such learning, but yet they were so absolutely humble. We read about Sanatan Goswami. When Lord Chaitanya called him for lunch near the Tota Gopinath temple, the Yamala Gardens, Sanatan Goswami was called. It was summertime, and it was at noon. The sun was blazing, and the sand was so hot, it was scorching. It was impossible to walk on the sand. And Sanatan Goswami, being a Goswami, he didn't have shoes or chapels. Not even the wooden ones that Govinda Prabhu wear. He was barefoot. And yet he walked on the sand. And his whole feet was getting blistered. And when he got there, Lord Chaitanya had already eaten prasad and was resting. And his servant Govinda gave Sanatan some prasad. And then Lord Chaitanya, he met Sanatan Goswami. He said, "How did you come?" He said, "I came by the beach." Lord Chaitanya said, the sand and the beach is like blazing fire. Your feet must be in terrible pain. Why didn't you come by the road near the Jagannath temple?" Sanatan Goswami didn't say anything. But you see, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is constantly reminding us of this principle of humility as the culture of a Vaishnava, non-envious and humble. So he's telling us what is in the mind of Sanatan Goswami. He knows because he's there. That Sanatan Goswami was thinking that I'm so fallen and I'm so sinful that if I go by the main road, then I have to go by Jagannath's temple. And the pujaris, the priests who serve Lord Jagannath, are always coming in and out of the temple. And if you know, there's crowds, and if one of them were to touch me and then go in and serve the deity, then it would be such an offense to the deity. that they touched me, and then they touch the Lord or make an offering to the Lord. So I cannot commit such an offense or implicate anybody else in such an offense, so I can't go that way. How many of us are so refined and so subtle in our humility? You know, Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they gave us the Hari Bhakti Vilas, yes? Which is describing so many technical principles of etiquette and rules and regulations for deity worship. But really the purpose of these things is just to refine our consciousness, to be so sensitive to what's pleasing to the Lord. Not to be callous. Not to be negligent, not to be whimsical. These qualities are a great disturbance to bhakti. But to really be here now at this moment, thinking in terms, even on a very subtle level, for oh please the Lord, to be immersed in that consciousness. That's what archana or deity worship is meant us to make us do. The Lord is before us. And all the little mudras and all the little purifications and achmans and everything and all the little offerings we make is to tune us in to being so very, very sensitive at every moment, our every movement, to do it in a way that's pleasing to Krishna. Raghava Pandit. Lord Chaitanya was praising Raghava Pandit in Panihati because he always wanted to bring the best of the best of the best of everything he possibly could for his deity of Madan Gopal. At one time, he had all these coconuts growing in his house, but there was a better kind of coconut that grew some distance away. And he had to go all the way to this place to get a more tasty coconut. He got some, and he clipped them, and what he would do, he would bring them into the deities, and he would give the whole coconut open, and the deities would drink it. And then he'd take it off the altar, and he'd scoop out the malai and offer that, and the deity would eat it. Very technical deity worship. And one time the pujari, as he was bringing the coconuts and the offering, he happened to touch with his finger above the door, and then he touched the coconut, and Raghava Pandit saw that and took the coconut and threw it over the wall. It cannot be offered to the deity. These are priceless coconuts that he went a long way to get. Why? Because he was thinking that, you know, people walk with their feet on the floor, and if a breeze comes, it may take some of the dust that's on the floor and bring it up to the top there. And he touched the top, and then he touched the coconut. Therefore, the coconut can't be offered. Now, for most of us, we wouldn't think of that. And even if we did, we'd say, you know, this is a valuable coconut. I went so many kilometers walking to get. I'll wash it in case any dust happened. But for Raghava Pandit, it's too late. Washing won't do. Discard it, throw it. Let somebody else eat it, not Krishna. And Prabhupada says that, you know, you may think this person had some cleansophobia or something. There are people who have this kind of phobia. It's like a mental disease where they're always worried about germs. Yes? But it wasn't like that. He was just so deeply thinking, so tuned in to making things perfect for Krishna. So this was Sanatana Goswami's feeling, that a pujari of Jagannath may touch me and then touch Jagannath. So rather than take that very, very extended, remote chance, he walked a long distance of several kilometers with bare feet in the blazing sand, and his feet were terribly blistered. But he wouldn't tell Lord Chaitanya his reasoning. But Lord Chaitanya understood his heart. And he is a symbol of humility. You see, if people just do these things, it wasn't that he's an extremist. It's a matter of the heart. It wasn't that Lord Chaitanya was so much impressed by his blistered feet. It was his heart. Other people may perform severe tapasya with ego. And the Lord does not accept that. He's not pleased with that. But the Lord showered his infinite mercy on Sanatana Goswami. Because Sanatana Goswami, although the most learned scholar in the world, he and Rupa and Jiva, they felt themselves fallen and humble. When Sanatana Goswami was telling Lord Chaitanya that I don't know who I am, I don't know why I'm suffering, I don't know who is God, I don't know where I'm going, I don't know why material existence is the way it is, but still people call me a pundit, a learned scholar, and I am so shameless I believe them. Please tell me, who am I? What is the purpose of life? And Lord Chaitanya, when he was hearing Sanatana Goswami speak, he was crying. He said, stop speaking like this. Your humility is breaking my heart. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami, actually, your qualities, your character, and your knowledge is so exalted that you are fit to be my guru. You are my guru. But for the sake of strictness, you are speaking like this. What does that mean, for the sake of strictness? It is his natural quality. He has all good character, but he's thinking himself the most fallen. Therefore, the nectarine river of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is flowing unrestrictedly, profoundly, inundating his heart. Because he's feeling himself low. The river flows to the heart that feels itself low. And the river will not reach the heart that feels itself high. This is spiritual geology. Narottam Das Thakur, Srila Prabhupada is quoting. Potita pavana hetu tava avatara mosamo patita prabhu na paiveyara. When we listen to this verse by Thakur Narottam, oh, how it should strike our heart. He's praying to Sri Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Koro More Toma Vina Ke Dayalu Jagata Samsare. My dear Lord, you are most merciful and you are Patita Pavana. You are especially inclined to those who are the most fallen. And because you have descended to deliver the most fallen people, you can, Prabhupada says it in this way, quoting Narottam Das Thakur, you can examine the entire creation and you will not find anyone more fallen than me. Therefore, my claim is first. If you have come to deliver the most fallen, here I am.
This was the same spirit as Rupa and Sanatana Goswami when they met the Lord at Ramakali. They were presenting themselves as the most fallen, the most degraded, lower than Jagai and Madhai, who were born of Brahmin families who may have done some sinful deeds, but they didn't serve sinful people like we do. You have come as to deliver the most fallen, and the purpose of your avatar will be fulfilled if you can deliver us. This is the way Rupa and Sanatana are thinking. This is the spirit of Narottam Das Thakur. This is what is being revealed through the heart of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And Srila Prabhupada explains they are not just speaking these words as flowery poetry. They feel it in the core of their heart and they mean it. And it's not that they're depressed because they mean it. Somebody in this world, if they say, I am the most fallen, I am the most sinful, I am lower than a worm in stool, I'm suffering due to boils of envy. If it was on a material platform that people are thinking like that, they'd have to be in a mental hospital. Yes? You go to a psychologist and tell him, I'll quote these verses. Psychiatrist, and they'll start injecting you with antidepressants. And they'll start, giving you counseling to make you feel good. Actually, you're a good person. And you're the This is humility of a spiritual nature. This humility doesn't make you depressed. This humility makes you completely empowered because it accesses the inundation of the river of the Lord's mercy. You see, material inferiority complex is when you have a big ego and it's not being fulfilled. Then you become depressed and you feel inferior. But humility is to be without ego, false ego. Total difference. Vaishnav humility doesn't mean to be depressed because our ego smashed. It means to be elated because our ego is being liberated. The real ego is emerging over the false ego. That is humility. Where we're connecting with the infinite grace of God to empower us. But that infinite grace, as is described here, it flows downstream. It flows to the lowest place, the sea. The sea level is the lowest place on earth, is it not? Or maybe not the lowest, but it's a low place on earth. Like Death Valley is the lowest place because it's, what is its relation to sea level? But it's all calculated according to sea level. The river goes to the lowest place. That's where the river finds its destination, in the sea. And similarly, the Lord's mercy will find its destination when our heart is in that humble state. And this is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's all about this. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thought he was a great scholar, which he was. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very, very expertly humbled him to realize that he knew nothing. And then the river of that mercy completely inundated his life and he filled with pure devotional service.
Devananda Pandit thought he was a great scholar of the Bhagavatam. But by associating with Bhakreshwar Pandit, he realized he knew nothing, he had nothing. And then he took shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was given the highest treasure of love of God. King Prataparudra was the king of Orissa. But his armies didn't impress the Lord. His palaces did not impress the Lord. His offerings of massive donations did not impress the Lord. What impressed the Lord? When he took the simple role of a street sweeper from his heart. That was the beginning. And then when he wanted to come into the Lord, he dressed himself as a common mendicant. He didn't come in as a king. He was a king. But before God, he came as a common beggar, mendicant, devotee. And what role did he take? He didn't take the role of, you know, my Lord, put my name in gold plaque above, you know, my donation. He came to massage the Lord's feet. And he had already massaged the feet of the devotees. Kashi Mishra, King Prataparudra, would massage his feet. And the Lord knew that. Because he humbled himself before the devotees, because he took the position of a street sweeper, now he was allowed to massage the Lord's feet. And he was reciting on Ramananda Rai's advice in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Gopi Gita. And as he was reciting, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, go on reciting, go on reciting. Oh, he was so happy. He was just massaging and... And then he, tavakatam ritam tapta jivanam. This beautiful verse about how the Lord's glories are like a river of nectar that is flowing from the mouths of the devotees. And anyone who chants these glories, they are buridhajana. They are the best welfare workers in all of humanity. And when he heard this, Lord Chaitanya got up and embraced him and soaked him with tears and says, you are the most munificent. You are the most munificent. And the Lord asked, ultimately he asked, you have come to bring me so much nectar. Who are you? Hare Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not meet the king. Just a few hours before in Ratiyatra, Lord Chaitanya fell down in ecstasy into the arms of King Prataparudra, and then he looked up and saw the king and said, abominable, I have been touched by a materialistic person, and jumped away. And King Prataparudra was mortified. And Srivas Thakur, or somebody told him, actually, he's very pleased with you. Swami's, you know, he's a sannyasi, so, you know, he has to do these things. So now King is being asked by Sri Chaitanya, who are you? You can't tell a lie to the absolute truth and get away with it. If he said, I am King Prataparudra, oh, God. He was in a disguise. And he couldn't lie and say, you know, I'm somebody else. He had to tell the truth. But the king, from his heart of heart, he told the truth. Because he wasn't thinking, I am King Prataparudra. He said, I am simply the servant of the servant of your servants, and the only aspiration I ever have in my life is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of your servants. That was actually what his heart was. And that's why the Lord the river of the Lord's nectarine mercy inundated the king, and he gave him such mercy because he was feeling that way. Lowest position. He was in the highest position, but he was feeling himself low. When Srila Prabhupada was Anjala Dutta, he was the highest Paramhamsa in the world. But he's saying, you have given me the name Bhaktivedanta, but I have no bhakti and I have no Vedanta, no knowledge. It is only by your mercy that you can fulfill the true meaning of my name. I have no qualification. He's saying he has no devotion and he has no knowledge and he's feeling it. He wasn't writing that on some website or something. It was just between him and Krishna. I worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose nectarine mercy flows like a great river, inundating the entire universe. Just as a river flows downstream, Lord Chaitanya especially extends himself to the fallen. Is there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
I was going to speak about Leelas today, but somehow this verse, like a river, took the little leaf of my consciousness and downstream, yes?
Maharaj, this is regarding the offenses. We hear that when the offense is committed to a particular devotee, we need to serve him and beg forgiveness from him only, then only our offense is nullified. But in the case of Devanand Pandit, when he offended Shivas Thakur, his offense was nullified by serving Vakreshwar Pandit. So that part, some devotee was asking us question. We could not reply properly.
Not necessarily. His consciousness was transformed by serving Vakreshwar Pandit. It's not that his offenses were removed. His consciousness was transformed. And that transformation of consciousness is what alleviates offenses. He came and surrendered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's quite obvious that he also, Srivas Pandit was right there. It's quite obvious, it may not say it specifically, that he begged forgiveness from Vakreshwar Pandit also. But his consciousness, if you just beg forgiveness with your mouth, but your consciousness is not feeling it, it's a formality. There's some benefit in that, but it's not a very deep solution. Humility means you really feel it. That answer your question? You see, because his consciousness was to serve a Vaishnava so well, Bhagreshwar Pandit, and he realized he took a very humble position to appreciate the Vaishnavas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his heart understood that it was so deep that his offenses to Srivas Thakur would obviously be rectified because he was in the right state of consciousness. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.